Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, welcome to Smarty Talk, everyone. Satchmo and DB rolling at you on the day after Easter. Will Spartan sports be resurrected? Stay tuned as we discuss this and other things.
Satchmo starts with the biblical references.
On your podcast for all things Spartan sports. Or as the kids today call it, the pod, DB. DB, how are you?
Greetings and salutations, Spartan Nation. I can envision Trout and Heston right now partying the Red Cedar River so the Spartans can play softball.
Parting the floodwaters around McLean Field. Oh, my goodness, that's right. Michigan State hit with biblical flooding, or at least a lot of water. More water than when we were in school.
Oh, my goodness. Not a dull moment these days at Michigan State University.
Yeah, a lot going on these days at Michigan State. Speaking of water, speaking of taking on water, the Michigan State football program taking on more water. Talking about that. We'll be talking about Michigan State, resurrection, hockey, maybe, Danton Cole coming to town, getting the job that seemed to be his destiny, and so we'll get that. But we'll start, DB, where it seems to be the only place to start, which is with with Miles Bridges. I suspected he was coming back. I had, just reading sort of the tea leaves, it seemed he wanted to come back and play for his sophomore year at Michigan State. Seems like he had a bit of Gary Harris in him. He enjoyed being in school. He enjoyed being with his teammates. He enjoyed being a student. He didn't want this phase of his life to end at this point. And he's back. He skipped the NBA, much to the disappointment of his mother. And it takes some guts to go against your mom. And he's back. He's coming back for another year. He's coming back for an encore performance for the Spartan basketball team. And all of a sudden, the Spartan basketball team, DB, has gone from, wow, we'll make the NCAA tournament again, and let's see how the freshmen and sophomore, the new freshman bigs play, and let's see what happens with them, to, holy cow, we got a shot to contend for the national championship, DB.
Yeah, it was exciting, and some good news for once for Michigan State, right? I mean, to have Miles Bridges make that announcement, it's started to feel that way. There was a lot of rumors, and of course, you and I were both sort of like, well, let's believe it when we see it. And then they had the big news conference, and good for Miles Bridges. You know what? I mean, he could have gone right into the NBA draft. He's ready, but he wants at least one more year. He wants a championship. He loves the college experience, and I love that.
I love that too. I mean, what I love the most is he likes being in college, right? And college is the best time of your life. It really is. I mean, you've got nothing to do. All right, yeah, you got classes to go to, and yeah, he's got basketball to play. But I thought of basketball and gone. He's hanging out with his friends. He's living the life he wants to live, and he's enjoying it. And I'm happy for him. I mean, if you take a look at Michigan State players, I mean, look, Gary Harris to this day talks about how, wow, he really misses his time at Michigan State. And you could sense from Gary Harris's that, yeah, he made the right decision to go pro after his sophomore year, but he wouldn't have minded it if he'd gone the other way and stayed another year at Michigan State. That's how much he misses it. And I think what people realize, fail to realize, is it's always a dollars and cents decision. And they're like, well, you just turned down millions to stay in college one more year. And yeah, he did, and he knows he did. On the other hand, he knows that this is a year of his life that he can't recapture. He's going to be a pro for 10, 15 years, DB. But he's only got a limited amount of time to be a college student, and he's going to take advantage of that. And good for him. Good for him that the driving decision was his happiness as a student and as a person, and nothing else. And look, if your happiness as a person says turn pro, then you turn pro. If your happiness as a person says stay in college, then you stay in college. And that should be the driving factor, and I'm glad he went about it that way. This Miles Bridges strikes me as an uncommonly mature college student. I'm not sure there are a lot of people that could have gone through the decision-making process that he made. And either way, there was a lot to be proud of about Miles Bridges, but, I mean, this is truly a remarkable decision on his part.
Yeah, no, I agree. Very mature decision. The question I have is, you know, first of all, you know, you never blame a kid now for going for the millions to the NBA. So the question I have, though, is how much is this a risk for him if he gets hurt? Is there some sort of insurance policy on him that's taken out? Like, what happened?
Well, I'm sure he'll take an insurance policy out. That's first and foremost. Second, as the Philadelphia 76ers have proven, if you're good enough, they'll draft you up high, and that money's going to be sitting there waiting for you a year, 2 years, 3 years from now, right? Because if he gets injured, again, heaven forbid he gets injured, he's 19 years old. By the time he gets back into fighting form, he's going to be 20, 21 years old. And I think the NBA understands and realizes this now, right? And so look at what happened with Joel Embiid and Nerlens Noel and who's the guy from Kansas? I mean, just all these guys from Philadelphia that, you know, turned out well. I mean, you can get hurt, and look, the Wizards, what was it, Beal? Isn't he always hurt?
Beal's always hurt, yeah.
Yeah, but he's figured it out. He's finally got healthy, but he's a young guy, right? And it takes a while for the body to mature and be ready to play at the NBA level. This is one of those things where I think the injury risk isn't significant. Look, there's always an injury risk. You get a career-ending injury, that's it. And so I'm sure he's going to get an insurance policy against that. But even an insurance policy isn't going to pay out the type of money that his career would have. So, yeah, it is a risk, and it would be foolish to say it's not a risk. That said, he's actually in position to improve his draft value. Because if you take a look at what happened to him this year, first of all, he played out of position at the four, first and foremost. Second, his shot needs a little bit of work. It does. He needs to work a little bit on his post games. One of the things I said throughout the season is he has to figure out how to harness his Superman power, which is he would get into the lane and he'd jump so high, it was almost like he didn't know what to do next. And he started to figure those things out as the season went along. And as the season went along, he started to figure out how to make his teammates better and put his imprint on the game. Because, you watch him play throughout the season, and he'd get like 17 points, 21 points, and 9 rebounds, and he'd almost forget he was on the court at times. And yet, towards the end of the season, you saw him learn to impose his will on the game and really start to carry a team. And next year, I think you're going to see that. I think you're going to see the development of him as a leader. I think you're going to see an improved handle. He's going to be better going to the rim. I think you're going to see improved post-up game. And then I think where you're really going to see the improvement is his ability to get his teammates involved and figure that part out. And so once you get those different aspects in, and then his mid-range jump shot, everything about his shooting is going to improve. So,
yeah, I couldn't agree. And the pieces around him too, and Nick Ward is going to stay on, and it's you know, some potentially good players coming in. This is just really exciting.
Yeah, really exciting. Well, think about it. You've got Bridges, you've got Nick Ward coming back. Cassius Winston is going to be much better next year because he's going to figure out how to play defense. All right, and he can already play offense. And the team is so much better with Cassius Winston on the court. And now once he figures out defense, and then he figures out when to take over a game, when to hang back, Josh Langford is going to be so much better next year. You started to see flashes of how good Langford could be towards the end of the season. He's going to be so much better. Right there, you've got a core right there. And then you've got some new recruits coming in. And now you've got fresh bodies coming in. And these fresh bodies aren't just fresh bodies. They're big bodies. And that's sort of the beauty of it. You've got Jaren Jackson and Xavier Tillman, who are big, big bodies, right? And then you've got Gavin Schilling coming back. So now you've got three big bodies that are big, talented bodies up there. So now what you're going to see is you're going to see a few things. You're going to see Miles Bridges being able to slip from the power forward position, the four, and play the three, which is his natural position, right? And then you're going to see Schilling being able to play the center, Nick Ward being able to power forward. Now you've got Bridges at the three. Then that means Matt McQuaid can go to his natural position, which is the two, right? Which is really good. And then Josh Langford can play the two. So you've got that. And so that's just a huge deal for them to play their natural position. And then you've got Cassius Winston and Temtem at the point guard. This is a big deal. And so all of a sudden people are playing their natural positions. You've got depth and big guys with Jackson and Tillman coming in. And so that's huge. And if they can land one more recruit DB, whether it's McCoy or Bowen, now you're talking unstoppable. And or Smith. Any one of these guys coming in, you're talking unstoppable. But this is now a national championship competitor because now you got Tillman and Jackson coming off the bench. It doesn't matter whether there's foul trouble up front, right? It doesn't matter if you got foul trouble in the backcourt. All of a sudden, Michigan State has people. And they just didn't have that before. And so it's going to be fun to see people mix and match and get things done. Kenny Goins, DD, goes from 25 minutes a game or 20 minutes a game down to 10 minutes a game in this configuration, right? And you'll take 10 minutes of Kenny Goins at the power forward position when he's not guarding a seven-footer.
All right. The depth this adds and the options for Coach Izzo are just incredible.
And they can pound the offensive glass, and they can rebound. I mean, I'm fired up.
I am really, really looking forward to basketball season, unlike professional segue alert here, football season.
Oh, football. TB. Oh, what's going on in football? All right, so for those that haven't been paying attention, a fourth Michigan State player has been suspended from the football program under a new sexual assault allegation. This has nothing to do with the previous three. A fourth. All right, and this one apparently allegedly happened in Meridian Township. And so suspended from the football team. There's going to be another Title IX investigation, I'm sure. The police are still investigating it, so it's not in the hands of the prosecutor's office yet. The Ingham County prosecutor hasn't moved on the Michigan State Police investigation to the previous incident that saw three players suspended and Blackwell suspended as well. We presume, in connection to this. We have no idea what's going to happen, DB. So let's not even speculate on what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But there is a legitimate question here as to when does this stop being one-off, isolated incident of sexual assault, and when does this become an institutional problem?
That's a very good question. This is beyond just one incident now. Again, we don't know what's going on with number four here. These suspects now have numbers to them, which is scary, actually. This could be the sign of some deep-rooted trouble within football. And how deep does it go? How far does it go? We don't know. There's a lot more to come. I'm unclear. You know, I've been really thinking about this. Well, is this just some bad apples in the bunch, or is this a character issue that's a little bit new to the Spartans program since they won the Rose Bowl?
Yeah, it's really weird. But let's say this. The Rose Bowl team wasn't without its character issues, right? Max Bull got suspended for the Rose Bowl.
Right.
We still don't
don't know exactly what was going on with that, do we?
Yeah, no. We have no idea. And so, I mean, in terms of, look, Michigan State had what was the Rather Hall incident under that first popped up in D'Antonio. And that issue sort of, he put that to bed, and we haven't really had any major problems within the program until recently. I mean, I think we've had locker room issues, but outside of that, we haven't really had any major problems. And then all of a sudden, they're springing up left and right, right? You had the Reschke incident. He's left the program. You had the sexual assault stuff. You've got the second sexual assault incident. And then, you know, D'Antonio is saying, what, as many as 15 players in the spring game were suspended for a variety of reasons. And so, yeah, there's some stuff going on with this Michigan State football program that makes you worry. Now, let's tick off sort of the good news. We're not in an Art Briles situation where you've got the university actively trying to cover things up. And not just cover up one incident or two incidents, but a huge volume of incidents. So that's the good news, that this is happening in an open and transparent way, and in such a way where we can legitimately question what's going on with the football program and whether the football culture needs to be changed there. The second thing that's sort of important in all of this, I think, is that D'Antonio is a sort of God and family sort of man, right, that doesn't put football above winning. I mean, doesn't put winning above everything else. And that makes a difference.
Right. Yeah, that makes a big difference. And that's probably why D'Antonio has a job.
Yes. Because this seems out of character for a D'Antonio program. He didn't have these sorts of problems in Cincinnati, and he didn't have these sorts of problems here at Michigan State for a long time. So it lends credence to the bad apple sort of theory. But there's a larger problem that goes beyond D'Antonio, DB, which is the culture of the athletic department at Michigan State. Because, let's face it, this Nassar investigation, the investigation to the trainer and the doctor at Michigan State hangs above everything else, right? Because a Title IX, an MSU Title IX investigation cleared him of any wrongdoing. And it turns out there was a lot of wrongdoing. And it brings into question whether Michigan State as a university and whether Michigan State as an athletic department is equipped and capable of handling these sorts of things. Because the track record hasn't been good.
Yeah, the Nassar thing is horrible. And again, this stretches across different timelines. You know, I'm going to go back to D'Antonio for a second and just comment that you mentioned D'Antonio not, you know, being in the winning at all costs mode. And I think if there's one thing that he would have learned from his one of his mentors, Jim Tressel, is not to do that. I mean, you recall, I don't think there was anything at Ohio State to this extent, but the tattoo gate thing that Tressel lied to the feds about certainly was quite severe and was his undoing there.
Yeah. The thing with Tressel is generally a good guy who was willing to look the other way, right? And D'Antonio doesn't strike me as the type of guy who's willing to look the other way.
Right.
And so with that in mind, you have to sense that this bothers D'Antonio on several levels. and he wants to get a handle on this and move forward. The question is how. And then the other thing is we're sort of acting in the dark here because we really don't know what happened in any of these incidents. It's tough to judge, right?
Yeah, we're operating with no information. I guess, you know, I told you this offline, and the one thing that I've become frustrated about, and this might be our pro-con debate here, is, you know, some of this points to, I mean, there's a staff member suspended, and that is Curtis Blackwell. And I have now had deep reservations about Blackwell being involved with the program based on the suspension and all the allegations here. We don't know what Blackwell did exactly, but the signs are pointing to him being the recruiting coordinator that something is not right. And I'm not sure that I like him in that position anymore, Stegma.
Yeah, I look. Blackwell's in a tough position, right? In that he's been suspended, but no charges have been filed against him. So we have no idea what he's done, and we have no idea why he's been suspended. But he is the recruiting coordinator, and everyone's like, "Well, these are the guys you brought in, right?" And so you ultimately have to take some blame for it. Yeah, that's true. He is one of the guys that helped bring these people in, but ultimately, that calls on D'Antonio and the assistant coaches that are recruiting him too, right? They're the ones that have to examine the player. They are the one that have to determine whether he has the character to do this, whether these are players of good character, whether these are players that can handle being put on scholarship at a major program. All of that can't fall on Blackwell, right? And so on the one hand, I understand what you're saying, but on the other hand, it seems really easy to scapegoat the guy that's making $85,000 a year and exonerate the guy that's making more than $1 million. That doesn't seem equitable.
Yeah, I mean, has the Spartan program run afoul, you know, also possibly because of the fact that D'Antonio's changed his recruiting approach and maybe gotten a little less involved with it, where he used to go after these program-type people that he had a vision for, and now you have somebody who maybe has the relationships, but they're worried about the numbers and the stars and all that stuff, and maybe they're not right fit. I'm not sure.
I don't think D'Antonio's necessarily changed his approach. I think what's changed is who's willing to listen to him, and that's two different things, right? I think when D'Antonio arrived at Michigan State, he and his staff did a really good job of identifying players that fit with his philosophy and the way he wanted to play, and not only fit with the way he wanted to play, but also did a really good job of just evaluating talent. And so he was able to find people that people had missed and bring them onto campus. And look, they're playing in the NFL right now. They're playing on Sundays. And so this isn't D'Antonio. There's this concept that D'Antonio turns one-star recruits and no-star recruits into, or player with limited physical abilities into NFL players. That's not what he was doing. What he was doing, he was finding players that had those abilities that no one else had found and bringing them on the campus. And now what's changed is because of the amount that Michigan State's won is two things have changed. One is when he finds a player and he gets on a player, other coaches from around the country start getting on a player because they trust D'Antonio's ability to recruit. And that two-star player that D'Antonio found now becomes a three- or a four-star recruit just by the fact that D'Antonio's recruiting him. And D'Antonio's not the only coach this happens with, right? Nick Saban goes and visits a guy. He goes from a one-star to a five-star. This is the way these things work. And so that's the first thing. The second thing is the number of people who are willing to listen to D'Antonio now and listen to his pitch has increased, right? So as before, he had to uncover talent that other people have found. Talent that everyone else has found, he can get in on and try and convince them to come to Michigan State because they're willing to take his phone calls and they're willing to come visit campus and they're willing to play for him because of all the winning Michigan State's done. So I don't think he's necessarily changed his recruiting model or philosophy. It's just that he has the resources and the ability and access to go after more people than he used to. And I think that's what's changed. So, yeah, I understand what you're saying about, you know, bringing in these four-star and five-star players. I think the player profile, the types of players that he's going after are exactly the same type as they've always been, because he doesn't go after a ton of them. But it's just so the types of players he's going after are the same. It's just the number of people willing to listen to his pitch has gone up dramatically, and the way people respond to his pitch has gone up dramatically. And so I think those are the two biggest changes we've seen.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see as time goes on, you know, how this affects the recruiting process. I don't think we know yet. I mean, you know, it's too early to say. I think more will come in the future, not only from this investigation and what direction the program goes, but then also, too, you know, what direction football goes and what direction did they go with the on-field personnel and how they perform on the field. And so it stands to reason that, you know, the team will hopefully improve. I mean, there was the spring game, which we didn't talk about. Any lingering thoughts from that?
Yeah, the spring game was weird, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. The players ought to have just had bags over their heads and no names on their jersey.
Yeah, the whole thing was weird. I mean, a spring game with almost zero publicity and no talking to the players. There's nothing to make of it, right? We have no idea who's healthy, who isn't. We have no idea who's suspended and who isn't. I guess Messiah DeWeaver had an injury problem of some sort. Looks like Damian Terry's fighting injuries of some sort and had some sort of surgery recovery. We have no idea what's going on with the football team. We have no idea what's going on with the football program. We don't know what the depth charts are. We know nothing. And so, yeah, yay spring game. It's really weird to watch other schools get so completely excited about the spring game or what their football season is going to be like, and we're sitting there going, yeah, we got no clue.
Yeah, it was. I didn't have the energy to tape the game and look at the combinations. I'm not sure there was any sense to it. I'm sure that was by design.
Yeah, You want to know what we have? We have talented athletes. We know we have talented athletes, right? That's the best we can tell you coming out of the spring game. We have talented athletes playing football at Michigan State.
It's all good and bad. I guess I could evaluate Brian Lewerke somewhat. I mean, I saw him make some good decisions and then still some freshman decisions in his development stage because he missed the, you know, last month of the year and didn't get to practice for a bowl game. He's still sort of in freshman year, so hopefully he can work some of that stuff out before the season starts.
Yeah, you got me. I mean, we have no idea. I mean, we've got receivers that have – got a quarterback that has skills. We have an offensive line that may or may not be good. We've got a defensive line that may or may not be good.
We don't know if the defense is good or the defense is bad. I mean, they made some plays, but it was hard to tell. You didn't have the whole team out there. Look, teams hide things anyways in spring ball, so you don't know everything. But you can see some things. I mean – when the kickers aren't kicking well, you can see that in spring ball. Jake Harbinger was kicking all right. I mean,
the best analogy to this is like watching 20 minutes of the most taking a 20 minute chunk out of the middle of the most convoluted Martin Scorsese film of all time, and then trying to figure out what the rest of the movie's about.
Right, we only saw a slice of the movie in the middle.
So many people
suspended. You couldn't say, oh well, those three guys are not there. So you know, blah 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 blah. The internet rumor boards. Oh boy, if you believe those, LJ Scott was one of the big three. Well, LJ Scott wasn't one of the big three because he was on the sideline, and he was hurt. So who knows what was going on?
Yeah. It's that's the problem, right? Is that I think realistically the best thing would have been to cancel the spring game, or
yeah,
and just hold like an autograph signing session, or something, or hold a fundraiser
for victims
of sexual
a youth clinic
for coaches where you get midget and peewee league kids in, and all the proceeds go to victims of sexual assault, right?
Yeah.
You get the kids out in the Spartan Stadium, starting down with the five-year-olds and going right up to the high schoolers, right? You get them down there, and you turn this into a day that they'll never forget, and you raise a lot of money for sexual assault victims and show some social awareness. And so you want to know right now, this is about more things, more than football. And that way you're not subjecting players to all of this stuff that you're going through, because right now you've got players that weren't on the field, didn't play. Everyone's wondering about that, right? And it's not fair to them. And why are you putting them through that? It would have been a much better way to handle it. There was no need for the spring game to happen. The more I think about it, the more I just, you want to know what, close the game. If you want to do a closed spring game, but if you want to do a public event in Spartan Stadium, do a public event, do it for charity, and give it to sexual assault victims, and, you know, get the kids out on the field for and do a coaching. You're right. That would have been a much better way to go.
Yeah, I agree. I think that you could have had D'Antonio just do a close to scrimmage and had him sort of report on some of the generalities of it and maybe how a few players looked and just keep it at that. I don't think I think it was just it was weird. It drew all this extra attention. In fact, they didn't even let a BTN crew do the game. They had one of the BTN sideline reporters down there, but George Blaha and Jason Strayhorn, the Spartan radio network announcer, simulcast on the Big Ten Network, the broadcast. And I don't know if all the teams do it that way, but in the past, I don't think it's been done that way. So I'm not really sure. They got to control the information pretty carefully. They did make one revelation about a certain player being hurt. That might have been Terry, but I'm not sure. And that was it. There was really very little discussion about anyone in particular other than just what was happening on the field.
Yeah. And the fact that you're showing what's happening on the field without talking about what's going on with the program, the whole thing's weird. You just can't do it.
It doesn't really make you feel good about the season coming up. I mean, it was going to be hard enough already coming out of a 3-9 year. And you look at their schedule. I mean, I just took a glance at their schedule recently, and gosh, I mean, you got to play Penn State, Notre Dame, Michigan, and Ohio State are on the road. You got some other tough road games like Northwestern. I mean, you're struggling here, even despite all this stuff, to find where they might be better than 6 wins or 7 wins anyway. And then you add this on top, and who knows what this is going to be.
Yeah. It's tough to say. But on the plus side, they don't have a week 2 bye.
Right, they moved it to week 3.
Yes, because that's so much better.
That is so lame. That is so, so lame. And I think it adds to the argument that this 12-game thing is ridiculous. I think it needs to go to 11 so you can have another bye in there or something. I think these non-conference games are getting stupid. I think they just need to cut back one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really do.
Yeah.
I think across the board, cut back one.
Yeah, but a lot of problems, the schedule got shaken up by people falling out, and that really left Michigan State scrambling. There were some issues there. Speaking of issues, DB, Mark Hollis tried to solve one when he hired Danton Cole as the Michigan State hockey coach.
Yes.
Professional segue. Danton Cole, DB, is an interesting hire, right? Because this is a guy that pretty much always wanted to be the Michigan State hockey coach. Everything he's done in his career as a coach has been done in an effort to become the Michigan State hockey coach. And that to me is interesting. You've got a guy that wanted the job really badly. He's done everything he could possibly do to get the job, and now he's got it. and we've got to see what happens. Davey, you're more plugged into the college hockey coaching community than I am. What is the word out there on Danton Cole?
Well, Danton Cole can coach. There's no doubt about that. I remember Danton Cole coaching at Alabama Huntsville, you know, a decade ago. And he took a team way down, you know, in a Division II scenario and brought them up into Division I. And I think the problem for Huntsville is that there was just no place to put them geographically in another conference or division. So I think they may still play hockey, but it might be club. I'm not even sure. But Cole put their program on the map. He knows how to run a college hockey program. He knows how to recruit. He's been involved with the USA National Development Team for 7 or 8 years now in Ann Arbor, and he knows a lot of the players coming through the pipeline, and he knows the process. So I think what you have here ultimately is when you look at where Spartan Hockey is, which is, you know, I think there was an X's and O's problem with and a recruiting problem, clearly, with Tom Anastas and that staff, unfortunately. I think you get a little bit more, you upgrade on the X's and O's part right away. And you have someone who's primed and been groomed to run a program. He really wants it, which is great. They added bonuses that he's a Spartan, which is great. I wonder, though, and this is just, you know, me thinking out loud more than anyone's reaction is, he knows the recruits, but can he sell Michigan State to them now?
Yeah, to me that's an interesting question. I guess he also coached in the UHL, the Muskegon Fury.
And so he
was there, and so he coached there as well. And then he played in the NHL, DB, before I get to your question. He played for the New Jersey Devils, and I think he played for the Lightning. He won a Stanley Cup with the New Jersey Devils. And I'll be honest, I don't really remember him that much as a player. Do you?
No, I remember his name popping up a little bit. He may have played with the former Winnipeg franchise, too. That might have even been who drafted him. I remember occasionally, you know, way back around when he was first in the NHL in the early 90s, because he was with Ron Mason, 85 to 89 or 90, somewhere in there. So he played with Rod Brind'Amour for the 1 year that Brind'Amour was there, and he was on a national championship team as a freshman in 1986. I think his role grew, obviously, you know, more after that. But, yeah, I don't know that he really had the pro career that, you know, Kelly Miller had or that, you know, people that have come after him have. But, you know, I think he has that NHL credibility even more than Anastas, who really didn't play professional hockey to any extent.
Yeah, and I think what Danton Cole is going to be able to do is sell people on Danton Cole. I mean, the general idea, look, the NCAA tries to make this big deal out about how players sign up with the institution. They don't sign up for the coaches. And you want to know what that is? That's a load of hooey. Hooey. And they're there for the coaches. It's the coaches that recruit them. It's the coaches they want to play for. And I think Danton Cole's going to be able to sell himself, and that's the most important thing. He's going to be able to sell the fact that, look, I worked for the U.S. national team and developed hockey there. I played in the NHL. I know what it takes to get to the NHL. I've coached at multiple levels. I know what I'm doing. And you're going to start playing for national championships and playing for national and winning national championships at Michigan State. And not because Michigan State's great, but because I, Danton Cole, will teach you how to get there. And so I think that's the most important skill. I think he's going to be able to do that. He's already skilled at doing that. He's going to convince people to bet on Danton Cole. And they're going to be betting more on Danton Cole than they are Michigan State. Now, once Michigan State starts winning, then he'll be able to sell them on Michigan State as well. But his immediate task is selling them on Danton Cole, and I think he's definitely going to be able to do that. And it helps.
Those are good points. And I think again, you know, you're shifting gears again 6 years later, and I think it's shifting in a positive direction, but fans need to be patient because the worst thing that can happen is in his first season, it may not go very well. In fact, the odds are it probably won't go very well in the first season. And so people can't just be firing him, and fans get so impatient. And I think in hockey, I think it is the right decision to You know, once they went with Anastas, which was a bad decision anyways, but they had to stick with him for a while. And I think you have to give Cole 5 years, you know, and see how it's going, unless something really, really bad is happening, you know, that they're not winning at all after year three. I mean, that it's just awful. You know, Kawasaki's a brutal, it has turned into a brutal, as Ron Mason called it, rat race. I mean, you see players, you watch after the NCAA tournament, I look at USCHO.com, player after player after player leaves the program early. It's very, very hard to keep with that depth. You know, it's a tough world out there.
It is, and it's going to be interesting to see what Dan Cole does with older players, right? Anastas was Anastas basically said, look, we're not going to do it with older players. We're going to get young, recruit talent into the pipeline and do it that way. And let's see what Dan Cole does and see whether he goes out and gets some older players and changes the philosophy that way. I don't know whether that's the right decision, but to me, from a recruiting standpoint, that's going to be one of the more interesting choices. The other thing is, look, one of Anastas' big mistakes was honoring Connolly's recruiting decisions. And so now,
yeah,
is Dan Cole going to do the same thing? And to me, that's interesting, how he goes about handling that process. So to me, those are the two big decisions facing Dan Cole. Well, finally, he's filling out his coaching staff, right? He's got to fill out his coaching staff, and how does he do that? So to me, those are the three big issues that Dan Cole is facing right away from a decision standpoint. But to me, he got some good news shortly after being hired. Professional segue. Red Berenson leaving University of Michigan.
Yeah, talk about a program in transition. Red Berenson, that's one of the few Wolverines we could say on this podcast that we have a lot of respect for, at least I do. Personally, Red was always giving of his time. And he's just one of those godfathers of college hockey, like Ron was, and like Jerry York is. And he took a Michigan program in shambles in the 80s and made them a powerhouse. And what they became in the last couple of years is very un-Red-like. I mean, the Wolverines, that's pathetic, actually, that they couldn't even beat the Spartans in regulation this year, a bad Spartan team. That's all the Spartans had to hang their hat on, is that they won twice in Yost this year. I mean, that's really, in years past, that might have been a great achievement. But, you know, it wasn't much to say. And talk about a program that I think it was a little directionless. Red was just sort of like minding the store. He was doing a favor to the AD there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sad to see him go. Red is truly one of the great guys in college hockey. And in that sense, it is definitely sad to see him go. And so I'm going to miss him on that front. I'm not going to miss, Red's Michigan teams giving Michigan State all they can handle. So I'm not going to miss that. But I am going to miss Red as a person. I've always enjoyed the company of Red Berenson. I always respected him as a coach and as a person, and the work that he did at Michigan was simply tremendous. And as a person in the media, I respected the way Red handled the media. He did it with class, dignity, and he was open to talking. And that's, as a reporter, that's pretty much all you can ask for. Is when you go up to a coach, he's willing to hear your question out, and not only is he willing to hear it out, he's willing to answer it. And not only is he willing to answer it, but it didn't matter whether he won or he lost, he was willing to stand there and talk to you and be thoughtful, be insightful, and you couldn't ask for much more from a media standpoint.
Yeah, it will be interesting. There's a big shakeup coming there, you know, with Michigan. Now they will look to hire their coach, and there's certainly names out there, and it'll be pretty interesting to watch to see what happens. You know, you have Michigan and Michigan State both in transition at the same time with new people, and that was probably smart of Mark Hollis to get right on it and make his decision. And I trust that Mark Collis really took his time with this. You know, there was a lot of names floating out there. I mean, talk about I feel like someone from MSU floated George Gwozdecki. I was almost sure that George Gwozdecki was going to be the coach of the Spartans, the way ESPN was talking it up. But it turned to be Dan Cole.
Maybe it was Gwaz floating Gwozdecki. I just thrown it out there.
Well, you know, it's interesting because Gwozdecki certainly has the street cred and the name and everything. But then I started to think, well, wait a minute. Why do you leave Denver? Why is he out of the game and coaching high school students?
Yeah, well, to me, I thought it was interesting. Is the Gwozdecki and said Apper, it seemed like was there a package deal? Where the RPI coach and then Gwaz, so Gwaz would coach for three or four years and turn the reins over to the RPI coach. And I was like, oh, that's sort of an interesting plan. But it seemed like a really expensive plan, too, especially when you had Dan Cole sitting on the sideline there. And so, it was odd. It was an odd coaching search. The rumors were just leaking everywhere.
You know what's interesting when you think about Dan Cole too here, Stashmore, is I'll bet that you'll see an improvement with the Spartans just from the standpoint that sometimes, you know, a fresh set of eyes come into a program like that, kind of like D'Antonio did after John L. Smith. You come in and you kind of look around and, you know, maybe you're not winning a Big Ten championship, but you kind of say, okay, you know, let's make these tweaks, let's do this, just some simple things. And all of a sudden, you have a team that's a little closer to 500 in the first year, which to me, you know, it's baby steps, but that'd be a great improvement if they can do that, and more is gravy.
Well, let's face it, the results can't get much worse than an ass just had this season, or they didn't win a month after November. It
that's truly bad.
Yeah,
truly bad. Yeah, I was joking, an ass should apply for the Michigan job because he seems to know how to win there.
He was better at Yost than he was at Mon.
Yeah, he coached U of M Dearborn before. Maybe he's a Wolverine in disguise. Take off his Scooby mask.
Oh, my goodness. Those meddling kids. Well, those meddling kids, DB, would have a problem traversing the fields in the softball and baseball fields in East Lansing right now.
What the heck's going on with that? Sewage
blowing
out on
goodness.
The field. I know we had that's moment. Maybe they were testing the plumbing and did a simultaneous toilet flushing test and flooded the field.
Oh, DB, this is becoming a recurring problem. A major old college field causing havoc with the spring sports schedules. The Red Cedar, too much rain. Had to ship the softball game against Michigan to Ann Arbor. I mean, wow. You can't do that. McLean Stadium couldn't handle baseball games. Soccer stadium was having issues. And they have to put down new turf.
So you did a little research on this, Tatch. Well, there's some environmental reasons why this is happening and why they can't change things, or give us some insight.
Yeah, basically, they've been trying to fix the flooding issues a few years now, and without much success, because they renovated the complex in 2013. But apparently, Old College Field is part of this a natural floodway, and so this is how the nature is supposed to flood the system. The floodwaters are supposed to go this way. So MSU wasn't allowed to install the drainage systems they wanted to, what DEQ or whoever they are, Department of Environmental Quality, the same people that screwed up the Flint water stuff, basically said that you can't install drainage systems there because it's a natural floodway. And so there isn't a whole lot Michigan State can do unless the state relaxes the regulations But you would think that this is, should have been a consideration when they built the field in the first place, right? That, geez, we really don't want to put a baseball field on a softball field or our teams can't play because the Red Cedar is going to flood every few years. The whole thing is bizarre. There has to be an environmental solution. There has to be an engineering solution that hasn't been thought of. And it's time to put our university to work. I mean, we've got an engineering department. And we've got turf management people. We've got the greatest turf management program in the world. It's time to keep happening every couple of years.
Yeah, we have good environmental science programs. And, you know, just as an example, after this came up, coincidentally, I was walking in a nearby park. And I saw that, and I talked to a few people, and I saw that they had, the ground was very wet in this one low-lying part of the park, and they had built deliberately this sort of trench in this sort of area and allowing floodwaters to come into the park and stay in a certain area so the rest of the park could be, you know, not as affected. And I'm thinking, well, maybe they can try to do something like that, like dig some gulch or some sort of something that's within the rules, of course, and regulations, that would be okay to capture some of this floodwater. I don't know the answer.
Over the weekend, I visited the Hoover Dam, and let me tell you what. They dug these massive tunnels underneath the ground to divert the Colorado River. They diverted, they built the dam, and then they released the water. Then they closed off the tunnels and released the water back so the Colorado went back to its original path. And I say, hey, if you could do that, you can sort of figure this out, right? It can't be impossible to figure out how to handle this. There's got to be a solution. And rather than throwing up your hands and saying, well, it's a natural flood path, we can't really do anything about it. Let's figure this stuff out, because there's got to be a solution. Oh my goodness. All right, let's wrap this up real fast. And Joe Louis Arena and the Palace of Auburn Hills closing. It was time for them to go, I suppose, although the Palace closing is really weird.
Yeah, the Palace is not that old. It still looks nice. It's a great facility, actually. I mean, it's unlike Joe, which was sort of a mistake in some of the way that it was designed. Certainly a great sight line, but the Palace is modern, and it was only, built in the late 80s, and so it seems like it has some more life in it. It's exciting that the Detroit Pistons are going to be playing downtown Detroit again, but boy, they better get rid of these arenas fast, Satchmo. Have you looked at the Silver Dome lately?
Oh, what a mess.
Oh, my God. Like, the skateboard guys have control of the Silver Dome.
Good for them. It's not being used for anything else.
like, they left the seats there, and the stupid foam dome or whatever it was, the cloth fell into the field, and the AstroTurf is still there. And it's hideous looking, but geez, just blow the thing up already. What is it sitting there for?
Yeah, and apparently there's some office complex they want to build on the site of the Palace, maybe some high-tech offices, that sort of thing. I will say this, though. The basketball arena, basketball should be played downtown, but there's more of a connection to the team downtown. I always thought the Pistons were really out of place at the Palace, right? And It was just bizarre. The people that really liked basketball weren't making the trek out to Auburn Hills to watch the game. That just wasn't happening.
Right.
And so what you ended up with was this very corporate culture out of South. And that's not to say that other arenas don't have corporate cultures, but at least you have a mix of fans that really love the game and then corporate cultures. And whereas the basketball really needed to be played downtown. The problem with Joe Louis Arena, besides the fact that it was just old, is that it never took advantage of the fact that it was sitting on the river. I never understood the point of this arena that had this prime real estate location, but it could have been anywhere in the world because it didn't take advantage of it. It was just really bizarre to me.
Well, if you wanted to see how the obesity epidemic has affected society, you just go to a Red Wings game or a college game at the GLI and sit in those seats. I mean, those seats were built with, you know, 1979 and 80, you know, body types in mind. And the last several times that I went there, you know, in the last few years, it was really squishy and stuffy in there. And so, yeah, the Red Wings will be in a much better place. And press-wise, I don't even need to speak about that. The general population doesn't know what a trek it was to get into that hideous afterthought press conference to do.
Yeah, it was terrible. I mean, the press-wise was terrible, but a lot of great memories there. Really quickly,
so many great memories.
Yeah, your favorite memory at the Joe, and then your favorite memory at the Palace.
My favorite memory at the Joe, I guess I'd throw two up there. The first is the college related. The first time I saw college hockey, my first event was there, and it was at one of the GLIs when they were in their heyday, and Michigan Tech and Michigan were playing in the championship and had a brawl before the game when the Husky of Michigan Tech was pretending to shoot the Wolverines, and they started fighting, and the refs had to come on the ice in their Hanes undershirts and break up the fight. That was my favorite college memory at the Joe. And my favorite pro memory at the Joe, Steve Yzerman scoring, I believe, was it his 500th goal against Colorado in the middle of the Avalanche rivalry. I think it was 500th goal. That place was electric. I never was in the Joe for a Stanley Cup playoff game, but I was there for that, and it was awesome to see that. That was something I'll never forget. Palace moment. So this is a personal one, and you were involved, Satchmo. We attended a Pistons game once many years back, and I think it was some random game where the Pistons were playing Milwaukee or somebody, and the Pistons, or the opponent, Milwaukee, had Robert Tractor Trailer, all 300 pounds of them, playing for the Bucks. And Satchmo, hurling the insult that Tractor Trailer about having some more donuts was fantastic. And everyone in the arena could hear it and were laughing at it. It was hilarious. That stands out, actually, as one of my Palace highlights.
Yeah, I'm going to go with that as my Palace highlight, too. I just loved it. That was so much fun. My two favorite memories at the Joe for me is one was watching the Russian Five take the ice at the Joe and just play a brand and style of hockey that the NHL hasn't seen since. It was remarkable. And then the other thing, my other favorite memory at the Joe has nothing to do with the play on the ice, but it was at a Red Wings game and game was sold out, and there was some obnoxious guy in an expensive suit sitting four or five rows below us, and he was just being rude as can possibly be to everyone around him, and he treated the ushers badly, and he treated people selling the drinks badly, and just every word out of his mouth was unkind to everyone sitting around him, and a puck got tipped, and it flew over the glass, and it landed in his beer, and it completely ruined his suit, and everyone around him started laughing. It was just a fantastic moment.
That's hilarious. What are the odds of that happening?
Not good, which is what made it even better. It was Joe Louis and karmic justice at the Joe. It was just a fantastic moment, and I will always remember that. All right, any final thoughts before we wrap this up, DB?
No, other than next time we speak, we can talk a little bit more about how any Spartans are doing in the NHL and NBA playoffs, and maybe circle back to the baseball season and see how the Spartans are doing, and then talk about the much-needed Red Wings remake that needs to happen, but maybe on pause for a while.
Yeah, we definitely need to talk about it. Statsro needs to vent about that. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.